Hey, Pluckies. I wanted to give a little shout out to my production team here on the Plucking Up podcast, Human Group Media. In addition to being a social impact company themselves, they are behind some Webby-winning and chart-topping podcasts that I think you all might like. They produce shows like That Feminist Fire, a narrative podcast about gender and justice, Inclusion Begins With Me, Conversations That Matter, and Forces for Good, which talks about how businesses can help solve some of the most pressing social and environmental issues of our time. Their network of shows cover mental health and climate change and human rights and so much more. You can head over to Human Group Media or just type in Human Group Media on your favorite podcast app to start listening. You're listening to Plucking Up, a podcast that shares uninhibited conversations with celebrated authors, entrepreneurs, artists, and leaders about their pluck-ups. Our guests share their sometimes never-before-told mistakes, rejections, wrong turns, and the more difficult seasons of their lives and careers. But they're also sharing with us how they moved on and up and through to keep creating and inspiring others to build lives of purpose, passion, and impact. I'm your lucky and plucky host, Liz Bohannon. Well, hello, Pluckies. So believe it or not, we are already at the season finale of season 5 of the Plucking Up podcast. What a season. What a ride. So many conversations filled with a lot of wisdom, encouragement, challenges, spiciness. I'm just so grateful that you have been here along for the ride, and I'm really grateful to all of our amazing guests who have joined us. So we are taking a break in between seasons, and during that break, I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag yet. I'm just saying we're working on some really fun projects that you're going to get to enjoy in your ears. How's that for a hint? It's going to be some ear treats for you. And here's the thing. I can't tell you about it right now, but I can tell you the best way to stay updated on what is coming down the pipeline is by following me on Instagram. So follow me at Liz Bohannon, and my Instagram community will be the first to know. But I'm really excited about what we're going to be working on behind the scenes for you. Speaking of being excited, I couldn't be more excited about our season closer guest. I mean, come on. Marie Forleo. Marie, if you don't know who she is, was named by Oprah as one of the greatest thought leaders for the next generation. She is a very successful life and career coach, a business leader and mentor. She is the author of the best-selling book, Everything is Figure Outable. This phrase, Marie's concept, I think about this phrase probably 3 times a week. I kid you not, tonight I was texting with my business partner about something hard that's going on in our business. And we were texting back and forth about it. And I was like, checking in, how you doing? And she texted me back, you know, everything is figure outable. I mean, it's so seemingly simple, but it is so profound when we approach the world and our life like this. And one of the things that I just really enjoyed hearing Marie's perspective on is that is kind of how we can intentionally cultivate mentalities and mindsets that don't make the world around us perfect. We cannot mind control the world, but we do have more agency and control over ourselves and over how we tackle problems and pluck-ups and challenging things than we might think. And so I loved this conversation. Couldn't think of a better way to end season 5 of the Plucking Up podcast. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Marie as much as I did. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being here. So I'm guessing that you have a team that does all of your like podcast outreach. So you may not know the answer to this question.
That's okay.
But I have a theory about how we're together right now. Do you know why your people reached out to us to be on the show?
No, but listen, I'm a big person that has like faith in crossings of the universe and things happening when they're supposed to happen and kind of a little bit of magic behind the scenes. So I want to hear your theory because this sounds good.
Well, I'll tell you this. You are an answer to a very specific prayer that I prayed. So I had a former employee that worked at my company, and we did a merger acquisition. And as part of that, we had to let go of some members of our team. And there was a specific member of our team that I had to let go of that it just gutted me. It was like one of my hardest moments in being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the things that you're just like physically ill about. You stay up at night thinking about it. Because not only is she amazing, but she was the breadwinner for her family and she's got a little boy. It's the same age as my little boy, all the things, you know, and you're just like, I just have to trust that like in the grand scheme of things, I know that this is the right decision.
Yeah.
On a macro level and on a micro level, there's just a lot of really crappy things that have to happen to get to the next thing that I deeply believe is right. But I have to believe if it's right in the big scheme, it's going to end up being right for everybody that's involved, right? And so
totally.
You're like holding on to that. But I was just like, I just prayed and prayed and prayed. And I was like, God, will you just create a path? Just let her land in a place that's actually 10 times better than even where she is right now. And not that long after we did our merger, she reached out and told me that she was working for you and your team. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like it was just one of those moments where it's like, yes, of course she landed there. So I kind of have a feeling maybe she is a little bit behind this, just put a bird in someone's ear, a little bug in someone's ear, and then one thing led to another thing.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now, of course, my mind is going like, who is it? And that's all that's happening in my mind.
Of course, it's Corinne Schubert. I think she's on your content team.
Oh, yes. She's fantastic. She's so fun. She's such a good soul. Oh my goodness. And, you know, thanks for sharing that story. First of all, because I feel like there's so many entrepreneurs that honestly, when they have an experience like that, that's gut-wrenching, it can sometimes feel like, oh, you know, like, am I the only one that goes through this? Like, I'm not supposed to feel that much about my company and my business, and I should keep it all business. And this is what happens when people grow and people change. So thank you for saying that out loud, because it's probably, you know, not the conversation we often have as entrepreneurs, because we have so many other things to talk about too. But that's the real, real stuff, at least for me too. It can keep you up at night and it stays in your heart. And it's really, really difficult.
I mean, I think I wept, and I will tell you, I don't know if I should say this out loud. I don't think this is betraying. No, it's not. I think it's appropriate to say this. About an hour after I let Corinne go, there was an email in my inbox. And that, you know, you're just like, when you're in a moment like this, everything is you're in emergency mode, right? You know, like I realized that for months I was in this place that like an email shows up and I'm like, oh my gosh, what's happening? And so, you know, you just let somebody go. You see their name in your inbox and it's just like, this is going to be bad. You're like bracing yourself, you know? Definitely can't be good. Like neutral is the best we're hoping for in moments like this. And I'm going to cry talking about it. I opened up this email and it was like a Pulitzer Prize winning letter that was just all about like, don't stop. And this was an amazing experience and I'll never regret it, even though it ended like unexpectedly, and just like, let's keep going and building together, even if we're, you know, building in separate ways. I will remember that for the rest of my life. Like the kindness and compassion of like, I just let you go and you just wrote me a letter encouraging me to like continue on and do the next right thing. Just the humanity.
That's so beautiful. That's so great, Liz. What a beautiful experience and something great to share. And it shows that, you know, every beginning is going to have an end and every end means a new beginning. And so that's true for every part of our lives and in business as well. And I think to have the grace and the foresight and the perspective for everybody who's together to understand that. Again, it's true in our relationships as well. Like I always think about that. I've been with my partner now over 20 years and he is my soulmate and he's the person that I want to be with forever. And we're human and everything is impermanent. And to realize it's like, oh gosh, this beautiful, joyful life that we have together at some point is not going to be. Don't know how it's going to come to an end, who's going to go first, what that all looks like, but it will. And so I think just understanding that kind of deep spiritual lesson of impermanence, that everyone on your team will eventually depart. Mm-hmm. Your business will not last forever. Mm-hmm. All of the great partnerships and collaborations and experiences, they're not going to go on indefinitely. And not only do I think that that allows us to, it gives us a chance to savor something even more and really appreciate it, but then mm-hmm. kind of loosen our grip of control when change happens because it's inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Industry, yeah. This reframe from what does just evolution look like and celebrating that. Okay, so we've really gone there. Some deep griefs, evolution. Let's back it up a little bit. I would love to hear a little bit more about little Marie Forleo and your childhood. Can you just give us kind of a glimpse into where did you grow up? What did your family look like? On this show, one of the things that we love to explore, I think a lot of people have a misconception about finding your purpose and your passion.
Yes.
And this idea that most people can look back on their childhood and see so clearly, you know, these breadcrumbs. And over the course of especially doing the show, but having, you know, hundreds, thousands of conversations that are not being recorded, I've found, yeah, sometimes for some people, that's really true. That it's like, man, when they were five, they couldn't get out of the kitchen and they kept baking and cooking and now they run a cooking show. Like, pretty clear line. There's a lot of people where that line isn't clear at all. And so I love exploring this. And I love kind of hearing when you were a kid, in hindsight, of course, you know, everything's different in hindsight. Were there things that you can look at and go, oh yeah, little Marie, we could have seen that coming? Or is your story one that's a little bit more full of surprises along the way?
I think it's a little bit of both. So as a kid, I grew up in New Jersey. We had plastic covered couches because that's what you do when you don't want any stuff spilled on your couch and you're like super frugal and you know, so I'd slide off of it. My parents, who God bless them, they are still alive. I just celebrated my dad's 75th birthday with him. So they're in New Jersey. They are both such characters. They are unbelievable humans, very funny. My mom's super intense. My dad's super steady. Mm. Just to give you a flavor, like I think they've been divorced two times and they're about to get remarried to each other. They're the only people they've ever been with. So it's super explosive. It's super explosive, but also super awesome. I have one older brother, and honestly, I got like from my parents was a really strong work ethic. So my mom essentially grew up in poverty and she battled a lot of abuse. So both of her parents were alcoholic. And my dad, it's like the typical, you know, his parents were first generation here from the boat. And so, you know, started working in an Italian bakery when he was probably like 12, getting up at 3 a.m. and like has never stopped working since until he retired about 10 years ago. But it's this kind of like, you put your head down, you make it happen kind of family life that I grew up in. But it was also a lot of like, my mom, she's amazing, but she is spicy as all get out.
A spicy meatball.
You know, there's like plates thrown, things smashing around. A lot of love, but also a lot of intensity, to be really honest.
Have you read Matthew McConaughey's book or ever connected with him?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually reading it now. Yeah. So you're reading
Green Lights now. Okay. We had him on the show, I think, I don't know, last season or the season before. But the way he talks about, you have a lot of similarities.
Yes. Because
his parents were also like high intense. I mean, he opens up the book. I think you know this, of being like kitchen, you know, like plates being thrown in the kitchen, ketchup getting smeared everywhere. And in 1 minute, they're physically abusing one another. And then he looks over and they're like making out on the kitchen floor. And like, it's one of those stories where you're like, I don't actually have a paradigm. I'm listening to this and going, this is carving out a new space for me. And it kind of sounds like you grew up in a similar home with like parents who couldn't quit each other, but also like,
Oh, totally. And my dad, though, just to like, unlike Matthew's story, like my dad is literally the most steady human ever.
Okay.
No matter what plates or anything are flying to, he like doesn't blink an eye. I've never heard him get upset in my entire life. He is the most consistent, steady force ever. Like almost to the point where we're like, Dad, you need to react. And he's like, nope. And again, my mom is, And she's amazing. She's also super goofy, really fun, really playful, really creative, like just kind of, you know, magical in that sense. So to move the story forward, it was like, as a kid, I did a lot of art. I did a lot of dancing. I also, and this is one of those breadcrumbs, you know what I was obsessed with, Liz?
Tell me.
I was obsessed with infomercials. And my dad.
Yes, we would have been such good friends.
Like my dad and my mom, like they were also the kind of, and you have to get, so I grew up in the 80s, and this is when like video cameras were somewhat new, you know, you could start videotaping everything. So they were videotaping a lot.
You put them like on your shoulder, yes, like a boom box. Sometimes you had to wear a backpack.
Uh-huh. Completely. Yep. And so a lot of times we would make like fun home videos, and I have to go dig these up, but I have several videos of me as a kid selling different things,
okay,
like doing a full-on infomercial, doing a full-on like, hey, this is why you need to get this. And I was just obsessed with it. I was also obsessed with fitness. So this was back when like fitness TV was new. I was probably one of the youngest members of Gold's Gym. And I, you know, I'm from Jersey. So I like tanning beds, really long French fingernails, enormous hair, because my mom, prior to having kids, she was a hairdresser. So she taught me how to tease it and make it forget about it. Forget about it. So I do think that the artistic side, there was this performer in me. There was this kind of curiosity around business and my mom's like total goofiness and playfulness. And there was always music playing and there's always dancing. So like all that, some of those breadcrumbs definitely showed up now, but I wasn't the kid. I was always multi-passionate. Like when adults would ask me, Liz, hey Marie, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would literally list off 15 things. I want to be a teacher. I want to be a model. I want to be a dancer. I want to be a writer. I want to be a businesswoman. I just kept going. There was never one thing. There was never even three things. There was always like eight or nine, and that list would just kind of rotate.
And not to psychoanalyze you, but no, I wonder if another kind of connection. So you and your work, you're a very big proponent of, what would I call it? Like psychological or emotional responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. This sense that it's like, I am responsible for how I'm showing up in a space. I'm responsible for my own feelings. Even within a relationship, I've heard you say, I am entirely responsible for this relationship in this moment. And if two partners come together, both saying, no, I'm the responsible one, you know, so you have this very high value on other people can't make you feel a way. You tell yourself a set of stories and you have to be responsible to those stories. And I wonder if growing up with your parents, specifically your mom, who sounds like an amazing, hilarious woman, who's also pretty emotionally volatile, might be the word that we would use.
Yeah.
Correct me if that doesn't sound right.
No. As she's been older, she's evened out. But most of her adult life, big, big ups, big, big downs.
But then watching, like, that's a pretty unique scenario to see someone else who is tied to this person, who is impacted by them and their choices and their emotions, to be not affected by that. Like, I'm envisioning your dad seeing a dish plate be thrown across the living room and going, I'm not reacting to that. I'm not engaging with that. I'm not going to be triggered or elevated by that. That's really unique to see that lived out, that I wonder if that experience also embedded in you, it's possible. It's possible to have so much control over your own emotions and presence that it gave you just like a vision for maybe how us lesser mortals, you know, can like show up with that level of kind of emotional awareness or control.
Yeah. I mean, so my dad is so incredible. He's such an incredible human and soul. And he has very old school values. It's like, you love your wife. You're going to take care of your family no matter what. Do you know what I mean? Like, so even if things are hard, even if things are crazy, even if things are whatever, this is the woman that I chose. This is the woman that I love. And this is the woman that I'm committed to. And this is my family. And I felt like my experience of my dad was always like the kind of, he was going to be the steady rock no matter what.
Okay.
And so I feel like not only did I witness him doing that, but I also have his DNA. So that part of me.
Oh, that's, you know, a good point.
And then with my mom, in all honesty, you know, seeing her go through so much pain of those big emotional highs and lows, and I've done a lot of research, and there's certain things that I know about the way that she grew up that really makes sense of yeah. how her kind of viewpoint on life and also, you know, some of the challenges that she's experienced. And so I have so much compassion for her. It was tough going through it. Like, I don't know if I've ever talked about this, Liz, but I'll share it here. Like, I got kicked out of my house when I was 13.
Wow.
Yeah. And my dad was the one who was kind of like the steady rock. And then I was kind of living in, they had this investment property that was not far away from our regular house, but it was just something they had purchased, you know, down the shore. It was not big. It was like a little condo, but I stayed there for probably like a year and a half to 2 years, mostly on my own. Yeah. And so you were talking about, wow. you know, this notion of responsibility. And so for me, I always came back, especially in those times, to my faith. It was like where I got really connected to God, not from a religious context, but from a spiritual context. Because one lesson my mom did always teach me, she's like, you don't need to go to the priests. You know, we're Catholic. You don't need to do that. She's like, you have a direct line. You can always talk. You can always have that connection. And whenever you need guidance or you need help or you need understanding, you just... it's a direct line. You just start talking. And so even in the most difficult times with my mom, that kind of reassured me in my faith that I'm not alone and that I could figure this out. And honestly, a lot of the difficulty was what inspired me initially to want to become a coach. You know, in college, I first started studying psychology, but it didn't feel right. Like those first initial classes, there was a lot of, and this was just my own experience. I went to Seton Hall University. I remember the first class I walked into, the professor at that time in like Psych 101 was like, okay, essentially everything that's wrong with you can be traced back to your parents. And true or not, something didn't sit right with me about that, Liz. So I remember walking over to the bursar's office and I was like, I need to change my major. Like, just get me into business finance because it didn't feel right. But I never lost that hunger or that desire to understand where so much of my mom's pain came from and like, why are some humans able, seemingly, regardless of their circumstances, they're able to process things and thrive and succeed and create. And then other people are, and I was always really curious and fascinated by that. And I always just had a drive to understand because I was like, you know, I had so much in me that I wanted to create and I didn't feel like I ever fit into traditional kind of boxes. So I wanted to understand that too for myself.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Do you have any emerging theories of even the way that you talk about that season? Like, I mean, 13, that's a tender young age to be on your own. And it wasn't like it was like, okay, for 4 days, for a long weekend.
No.
It's like a year and a half is a significant part of your formative years.
It was.
To feel a sense of, I'm on my own. I have to figure this out. Do you have any theories of why that experience seemed to lead to more of kind of a healthy, empowered sense of, I mean, you literally wrote the book on figuring things out versus it being really traumatic or paralyzing to you? Or, you know, like that feeling more like I was abandoned versus here was this opportunity that I had to figure it out.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I cried so much. Like I was so sad and I felt absolutely felt abandoned and absolutely felt like rejected by my mom. And honestly, I was even a little bit pissed at my dad. I was just like, why aren't you getting her, you know, like, you know, stepping in even more.
Yeah.
But the truth is, rather than I've always been someone, I've got a lot of energy as a human. And at that time, I had a couple things going for me at that particular stage in my life. One, for years, Liz, because I love dance and I love movement, but I had never been in formal dance classes or training. That just wasn't a part of our world. And my mom, and it was just like extracurricular activities. It was like, no, you play and you make stuff, but it wasn't about, you know, getting into all these activities like kids do now. It was just not a part of my growing up. So anyway, I had tried for years to be on the cheerleading team because I wanted to dance and I wanted to move. And I had been, I had failed for years and years in a row. And I finally made it on. Like I took all the feedback and I got better and I finally made it on the team. So when that whole thing went down with my mom and I got kicked out, I had cheerleading practice. And I also started working. I've been working since I was 9. So I got, I think it was like when I was 14 or 15, I could get like a little work permit. And so I started work. So I had so much to do. And then I had a boyfriend. So it was like, I just filled up my time, to be quite honest. It was like, well, I'm going to keep busy. I'm going to do these things. And I've always had a very big fire in my heart to be independent, to like be on my own or do my own things, go explore. So as painful as it was, and it was, there was also this sense of like, oh my gosh, like I can do this. Like I was finding my feet underneath me in a way that was really interesting and that was really exciting. Again, mixed with pain. it wasn't like rainbows were shooting out of my eyes, but I was like getting to know people on a different level and I was challenging myself and I was starting to like earn a little bit of money and I was starting to see that I was capable in terms of cheering. I became the captain kind of early and then I had all of these people underneath me to mentor and I developed these like strength training programs and different ways for us to train. And so all this stuff was happening simultaneously.
Wow. Okay. So I have a background in childhood where there's definitely some things for me that led me to this story being, I have to take care of myself. Like, yes. I have to figure it out. I have to take care of myself. And for me as an adult, that has led to, I have a really hard time stopping. I have a really hard time resting.
100%.
And I was doing some work with my therapist who was really kind of digging into that. I find to be really challenging when also you're somebody where when that sense of like, I'm going, I'm creating, I'm moving is good stuff. It's like, oh yeah, you're create. It's not just, it's definitely not destructive. It's actually regenerative and you're creating good things that are born out of, you know, love and generosity and all of these things. It's sneakier. Because so many people are going like, that's amazing.
Oh, you're getting all these rewards for it and all like, this even attention,
my sister
right?
just left me a Marco Polo this morning. I was like really sick with COVID last week. And I had this event in Texas, this big initiative that I'm super excited about that just came to life in our company. And it was like, I, you know, really made this very last minute decision that it was like, I think I'm better, you know, bought the flight. I had canceled my trip, bought the flight at, you know, 9 p.m., was on the flight by 4 o'clock the next morning. And I'm feeling great about it because I'm like, this is awesome. Like, yeah, if I'm capable today, even though I wasn't tomorrow, like, why would I not do it? And my sister, just this morning, I was listening to a Marco Polo and she was like, she made this comment. She was like, I mean, dang. And then you were so sick. And then I saw you in tech. You are a workhorse. And there was something about it. It made me want to go like, yes. And I love that about myself. And also, I know that for me, there's pain there of going, there's probably some residual sense of you can't stop because you got to figure it out. You have to take care of, which is of course not conscious. Like in the moment I'm going, I'm doing this because I really care about this initiative and I really want to be a part of launching it. So has that been part of your where does that sit with you as an adult? Like
totally. Well, I would say that probably until fairly recently, like there was certainly an awareness, like I've got to take care of myself because I can't depend on other people to do it. And, you know, it served me in many, many ways. And then the dark side, the underside of that is the inability to turn off and a deep, deep fear that if you stop, it's all going to fall apart and that everything that you work so hard for is going to be taken away or poof. And it's just like, so I battled that hard. And at the end of 2020, the thing that actually really saved me was that I got myself so sick that I had a tumor growing outside of my uterus and I had to get an urgent hysterectomy when COVID was still, we didn't have vaccines. Like we're still in that stage, right? Where we were like, nobody, we were kind of like, you know, I don't know how this is going to go. And Liz, it was November of 2020. Josh was actually filming a movie in Ukraine previous to the war. And then I discovered I had to have this surgery. And it was at a time when like, again, my parents are old. Like we didn't want them to come in for fear of anyone getting sick. We didn't understand half of what we know now. And so after I had this surgery, I think I was out, I couldn't move, I couldn't work out, couldn't do anything for like 6 weeks. That was the recovery time. That was the first time in my life that I had ever taken 6 weeks off. Like, I didn't know what to do. It was wild. And in that healing from the surgery, the urgent hysterectomy that I had to get, so many things became clear. And it was like, I got to see myself in such a different way. And I got to feel and understand who I had been and who I wanted to be moving forward in a very different way. Mm-hmm. And it actually gave birth to this program that we have called Time Genius, which is brilliant. But it was like it all came pouring out of me because I realized what a dysfunctional relationship I had developed with my own ability to produce and productivity and all the fear underneath that and all the scarcity underneath that and the pushing and the punishing of myself that was, again, simultaneously so enlivening because I love what I do. But then there was the underbelly of it as well that led to incredible exhaustion and depression and anxiety and all these things. I was like, where the hell is this coming from? Like, you know, on the surface, I knew that I'm so blessed. I feel so, the people in my life, my company, my team, my work, like all of that on paper, it's like check, 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 check. But there were all of these emotions that were coming up and all of this really dark stuff that I had to work through. And I understood that a lot of it was pushing myself to such a level that I never gave myself a chance to rest. And, you know, you do that for almost 30 years, it's going to have some pretty big repercussions.
Yeah.
So I feel like now for me, I have reset my nervous system in such a great way. And I can start to feel into if things are like getting a little pushy or, you know what I mean? Something's coming up. I feel like I have a much better handle on how to downshift and upshift now. I never had that before.
And does that, do you just kind of integrate that in a more fluid in the moment way, or have you since then set more kind of rhythmic structures in place to kind of force you into that?
Well, I pay attention a lot more now. In all honesty, part of this too, there's a financial component to it, to be really honest with you. So it was a while ago now that like I don't have to work anymore. And I crossed that Rubicon a good while ago. And so that's a strange reality. I never thought that I would be able to say what I just said. When I started my business, I was in piles and piles of debt. My family does not have a lot of money. Like it's not where I come from. So that is, it's such a weird thing for me to be, like, I almost still don't believe it, even though I know it to be true intellectually. you know, and I talk with the people that help me manage everything. They're like, Marie, like, really, you know, and so I'm receiving it and I have to keep receiving those messages because what we went to before with how I grew up, I was like, there was never enough of anything and having to take care of myself. So it's like, you know, 40 something years of that conditioning, I can't expect the pattern to break overnight.
That like scarcity mentality. It's just like deeply, deeply embedded.
Completely.
Well, I'm curious about when you, because you said it so matter-of-factly of like, I have what I need and I don't need to work anymore. And I'm curious because that was a unique thing to hear with such clarity.
Yeah.
Because I definitely know of people, it's like, well, according to my definition, you would never need to work again.
Sure.
And, but it's pretty rare to hear somebody say it because I think what I experience is as you make more money and you have more resources, your desires and need also grow to kind of fill up that space. So now I've created a lifestyle that does need a little bit more, or there is this sense of kind of, it's never, I think the more common place for people to be in is it's not enough right now. I need a little bit more. I need a little bit of the next thing. So I'm just curious of like, did you set some sort of goal or on the front side where you like, when I hit this, whether it's a revenue profitability number, something that can support your lifestyle, like how did you get to a place where you were even could say so unequivocally, this is enough?
Well, I think it's because intrinsically I'm a fairly simple human.
Okay.
Meaning I do not, and I don't judge anyone for their desires, to be clear. Right. So, but I have never been the person, just like how I knew Liz, I was like, oh, I'm not dreaming of like this massive big wedding. I wasn't the little girl who's like, I have to have this dress. I'm also not the adult who's going like, I need to have my own plane. I know that some people like that might be something for, again, I am a very much no judgment person. Everyone is here, I believe, on planet Earth with their own soul assignment. I'm not playing God. I'm just here to do me as the best I can be and be as loving and as open and as creative as possible, right? So I also know, like, you know, you get into your 40s and it's like you have a bunch of stuff. It's like everything. There's this song that Josh and I sing, and I always sing it because it's true. It's like everything needs love and caring. Everything needs nurturing. Meaning every single thing, your home, your business, right? Your body, your clothes, your relationships. And
when people have a lot of material things, those things require love and nurturing too. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you've got all these big plates. I just don't have an interest in that kind of bigness in my life. The bigness in my life that's attractive to me is freedom. So freedom is my number one value. So based on how I know me to be, based mm-hmm. on how I know I want to live, based on the fact that I love design, I love nice things, but I don't need huge things. I just like mm-hmm. just enough, right? Mm-hmm. That's how I know. I think money, by the way, I love money. Just to say it unequivocally, I am not ashamed of that. I'm very proud of it. I love it because it is energy and it's a facilitator of helping bring the world that I would love to see come to life, right? So mm-hmm. I get to vote with my dollars and I get to move that energy into different areas that I believe are beautiful and positive and full of potential. So, okay, I said a lot there. It's essentially for me, it's about kind of understanding the value of simplicity and enoughness and also trust and faith in what I have grown and being really real about the fact that I don't want that plane. I don't want to necessarily have a gajillion, you know, mansions or whatever. It's just not exciting to me. It's not what mm-hmm. I want. So then it's just being a realist about what else are you going to do? What else you want to create? And why are you doing this? And for me, the reason I keep going is because I love my work. I love creativity. I love changing people's lives and I love making cool stuff. But back to the original conversation, I don't need to go at the pace that I've gone before because there was a portion of that mm-hmm. that was run by fear and scarcity. And that's mm-hmm. the piece that I'm interested in letting slip away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is so good. There's also something really freeing. I remember we had Liz Gilbert on the show and she was talking about how, you know, she spent many, many years bartending.
Me too.
And that's how she took care of herself. That's how she fed herself. And then she kind of had this little side hustle, side gig, which was her writing and her creativity. And I remember her sharing about how she reflected on that time, because I think so often the narrative is, especially when you don't come from means, like, I know what that was like and I never want to go back there.
Yep.
There's fear.
Yep.
And kind of like, I will work the rest of my life to avoid feeling what that was like. And Liz's story and perspective was, I was a bartender. And guess what? I was really good at it. And I was generally pretty happy. And I knew that I was self-sufficient. I wasn't like rich. I wasn't wealthy. But there was this sense of, I can do it. I can take care of my needs. I can find purpose and meaning in this job. And I've created a life where I can still have the mental and creative capacity to go right on the side.
Yep.
And having experienced that gave her a sense of freedom where it's like, if that is the worst case scenario, if I'm so afraid of going out and pursuing my passion or starting this business or doing this thing because it's going to fail and I'm going to go back there, she's like, if I went back there, all right, that'd be fine.
Yep.
Like I was fine then and I would be fine now. And I just remember like, there's so much freedom. I was literally telling my husband the other day that I think I feel similarly where I'm like, I'm not like super wealthy, but I'm like, you know what? From a materials perspective, I have a safe home that my kids feel safe in and that is aesthetically pleasing enough for me to be okay. I've got a minivan that I'm very attached to. I'm just like so hardcore. I'm just like a minivan mom and I lean into
yes.
it, but it really sparks
yes.
joy. We saved up last year and got a hot tub. And it's changed my whole life. Like yep. I'm passionate about our hot tub. It's changed my social life. It's changed my relationship with my kids. And these are all obviously just like material things that I've gone, I think those are kind of the big three for me. Like I feel genuinely like a minivan, a hot tub, and a safe home.
Yep.
I live in like a little commune situation with my friends. And there is this sense of like when everything else becomes extra, and going like, okay, if we have stuff on top of that, we get to start being creative and explore and, you know, what's the purpose? But it's not actually out of a need. That can be a remarkably freeing thing.
Yes. And then the question like for me becomes, oh, what else do I want to create? Like, what does yeah. my soul want? Why am I here? Right. What else can I give without this kind of, you know, lurking pressure?
Yeah.
And for me, that's more interesting. And sometimes it's confronting because, again, we talked about this. Most of us, you know, we human beings live our lives out of habit, right? Science shows mm-hmm. it's up to 40% of our daily activities are things that we did the day before. And so to have the courage to reexamine some of those patterns for yourself mm-hmm. and to say, God, what am I doing just because it's always what I've done before? it's what I did in my 20s or what I did in my 30s. You know, do I want to keep doing this and why? I think those are the big questions, and it's really important to ask ourselves while we still have time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. I also think there was so much wisdom in what you said about, there's a lot of self-knowledge involved in that, of you saying, my still small voice says, that's not exciting to me. I don't have a desire for that. Where I feel like a lot of people get tripped up because their still small voice says the same thing. And yet they're thinking about what other people are going to think about them, right? Of like,
right.
But if they have a value to the mansion or to the private jet and I don't have that, what I'm actually trying to buy isn't the mansion. It's trying to buy the person who that is their value set. I want them to look at me and I want them to say like, you're in, you're approved, you're part of the club. And so there's a lot that comes to, you know, one of the core questions that I ask myself when I start feeling afraid of failing is I go, are you afraid truly of failing? You love this thing so much.
Yeah.
And you are so desperate to see it come in the world that the idea that you would try and fail, there's just, it's just grief and it's sorrow. And that would be really sad because you just so desperately want this thing to exist in the universe. And sometimes the answer is yeah. And then the next thing I ask is, are you really afraid of the thing failing? Or are you afraid of what other people are going to think if that thing fails?
Like 100%.
The shame, the embarrassment, the rejection, the story that they're going to tell about me, the story I'm going to tell about myself. And yep. That has been so clarifying to me to be very honest with myself of like, are you truly afraid of letting this thing go because it's your life's purpose and the thing that you have to see come into the world? Or are you afraid about how that's going to look?
Yeah.
And getting really honest about the difference between those two things for me can be so clarifying and give me so much direction.
Yeah. And the identity piece of it too. It's like, you know, what does this say about you and what are people going to think? And I, you know, and this is a very kind of classic saying, and I just think it's so important to remember. It's like people are so wrapped up in their own ish. They are so wrapped up in like their own stuff that even if you, you know, you flittered on their screen for a minute, somebody said, did you hear about Liz? Did you hear about Marie? Like, it's like a 15-minute conversation and then they've moved on. Like, it's like, we all have so much stuff that we're trying to work through on our own. It's like, nobody's going to be thinking about you, honey.
It's so good. It's so good because so often I think when we put a lot of weight and stock into other people's opinions of us, like even the word that we use around that is like, oh, you're like, you're insecure, you're not confident. I actually think it's like you have almost an overinflated sense of ego that you are believing that you are so big and that you are so important that people would be spending a decent amount of their mind energy thinking about you. And it's just like, totally. Whoa, who do I think I am? Oprah? Like,
yeah.
And that can be, it's really kind of humbling and being like, oh, whoa, it's not that I'm struggling with insecurity. I might be struggling with a little bit overestimating how important I think I am. Because one, I feel like garners a lot of sympathy, you know, and you're like, I'm just feeling really insecure and not confident. Everybody's going to be like, you're awesome. You're amazing. If you show up in a room, you're like, I think I'm really struggling with an overinflated sense of ego. There's like a little bit less sympathy for you, you know? So that's like a thing that I do of go like, do you want to, this might be an ego. Like you need to ratchet that down a little bit and just rightly place. There are 8 billion people in the world and we're all just kind of doing the best we can with what we have.
Totally.
And best case scenario, there's like about a dozen people who are dedicating, like even then, a still pretty small percentage of their waking hours thinking about you.
Yes.
And that's if you're lucky. That's if you're lucky and so blessed with people that really love you and are committed to you and care about you. But
the most torture chamber, I think the biggest one is in our own heads. It always is, right? It's always the most dangerous and crappy place to exist is between our own ears 9 times out of 10. And that's just human nature. Like it's the human mind. It's like, oh, I effed up. I didn't do this right. It should have been better. And it's like, that's why for me, just staying physically present and staying engaged and putting your attention out, it's just the best thing ever. Like before I got onto this podcast with you, Liz, I was so proud of myself because I love dancing and there's a dance studio I go to here in New York. And I was looking at the time of this recording with you. And then I was like, wait a minute, my dance studio, my work studio. I'm like, yeah, like I'm going to go jam it out. Like the euphoria that you feel like getting out of your own way and not putting your attention on whether or not you're failing or succeeding or who's doing better. It's like, it's all BS. Yeah. It's all BS. And just staying engaged in whatever it is in your life that brings you immense joy. For me, that's dance. For someone else, it could be running. It could be painting. It could be being with your kids. It could be making music. It could be making a meal, baking a pie. It doesn't matter. But the more that we're engaged with our actual life rather than thinking about our life, the happier we're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to land the plane for us soon here. But my last question would be on that. What if there's somebody that's listening to this conversation and heard what you just said and goes, I don't even know what that is, Marie.
Yes.
I'm so out of touch with like, you have dance and that's awesome. Like, good for you. That's easy. You've identified that and you can go do it. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what brings me to life. So how can I do that? What encouragement or advice would you give to that person?
Couple things. One is that so many of us have experienced so much disappointment and we've kind of been suppressing our heart and our soul for so long to be responsible, to show up, to take care of other people, you know, to grind, to be productive, to produce, that it's natural if you're like, I don't even know what brings me joy. I don't even know what sounds like fun. You want to put on your curious scientist hat and you want to experiment and explore. And even if you take a walk around the block, no phone, no listening to podcasts, no whatever, just shut it off. And just start to ask yourself, like you can put your hand over your heart. And this, I know this might sound cheesy, but honestly, it's like the heart is the source of our greatest wisdom. I think it's the channel to the natural knowing that we all have, whether you believe in God, the divine source, universe, whatever. Put your hand on your heart and say, what sounds like incredible fun for me to do? And then just listen, listen to the response. It might be like, go to the toy store. It might be like, go lay down and take a nap. It might be like, go to a class or do this or do that. Just listen, because everybody has this source of internal wisdom within that is trying so hard to be heard. You know, one of the first dance classes I ever took before I started listening on a big level, when I got into the first dance class, Liz, I cried and I wept because I heard my inner voice say, you're finally listening. And so I think that for anyone listening to this podcast right now, put your hand over your heart and ask, what sounds like fun? Even if it's ridiculous, you know, going to see Magic Mike with my friend, like the third Magic Mike, we're in the theater, we're throwing popcorn. We just had the best time. Like anything that sounds like silly, frivolous, non-productive fun, go do it and experiment, because clarity comes from engagement, not thought. You're not going to think your way into fun. You're not going to think your way into an open heart or a deeper connection with your soul. You're going to engage, experiment, and try things. And I promise you, whether it's go making chocolate, creating little muffins, you know, playing music, painting, whatever it is, there's going to be this whole channel of creativity that opens up and this whole guidance that you get in touch with about the next steps in your business, your life. That's never going to come from any coach. It's never going to come, honestly, from a therapist. And it's not even going to come from your own brain. It's going to come from your heart.
I love that. And I know, you know, folks listening, there's no formula, there's no silver bullet, but I will take the opportunity to plug rollerblading. This has been my, I just started rollerblading literally like 2 months ago. I just got online. I bought a pair of $80 rollerblades off of Amazon, and the amount, and I'm so bad. I literally can't stay up. I'm just constantly falling. I cannot go down even a slight decline. It's like a, you know, it's terrifying to me. But asking that question of just like, just following the whim of being like, and here's the thing. If you try it and you're like, well, in my head that was really good and it actually didn't give me life. Great. That's actually wonderful information.
Totally.
Now you know that rollerblading isn't it for you. But kind of just like taking it down a notch of the intensity of like, but if I tried this and I didn't weep with joy, like I'm dead inside and I'm never going to have desire. And instead being like, doop, check it off the list. That wasn't it for me.
Yeah. I will say this. I think that for anyone listening, if they feel uninspired, not in touch with their heart, what could possibly bring them joy, please move your body. There is so much creative wisdom and intelligence in the body. So dance is my thing, right? But it could be riding, walking, running, doing weights, strength training, Pilates, anything that you can get out of your head and into your body and physically start to move, it changes you neurobiologically. It changes you neurochemically. And I guarantee you, it's not going to necessarily come from just thinking or even journaling, but if you move, you're going to get downloads. And so put yourself in a freaking class, turn on YouTube, whatever you need to do, work up a sweat, and I guarantee ideas will come. They'll come out of nowhere. It's going to be like lightning in in a bottle. You're going to get ideas or visions or like a whisper or just something will pop up in your head to call or do or sign up for. But the body is where the most intelligence lives, not rational intelligence, but soulful, meaningful wisdom lives in your body. And you have to move it in order to access it.
I love it. We're actually going to end there because I think that that was such a juicy, here's the thing. There's something really like, you can just sink your teeth into such a practical, actionable piece of advice that we're just going to end right there. So if you're feeling uninspired, if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're not in touch with your own desire, inspiration, follow Marie's advice and just go move your body. Go move your body and see what happens next. Mm-hmm. Marie, thank you so much. Where can people find you? What are you working on right now? Where do you want people to go?
Oh, thank you. This was great. So to find me, I'm at Marie Forleo on Instagram and just marieforleo.com on the website. And speaking of the website, we have an incredible free training there. It's called How to Get Anything You Want. So it's like a one-on-one coaching session and you can download it. It's 100% free, all audio. So if you are going to go move that body, I think it'll be fun to listen to that and to get some ideas for how to figure anything out.
Well, I know what I'm doing on my next rollerblading session. Marie, I had so much fun. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh,
I just
such a
really
joy.
Appreciate your time and really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
All right. Well, you know the drill. This podcast was made possible in part by my amazing producers at Human Group Media. I already told you this, but stay up to date on some projects we've got coming down the pipeline. Best way to do that is by following me on Instagram. I'm at Liz Bohannon. You can also follow my producers on Instagram. They're at Human Group Media. As always, we love, love, love to hear from our beloved Plucky community. So never hesitate to reach out. We will see ya on the flip side. But until then, you know the drill. Stay plucky.